Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has taken over 100,000 American lives and led to a big spike in unemployment. The outbreak is also taking a big toll on the country's mental health. Recent surveys show a big jump in people reporting symptoms of anxiety, depression, and other mental distress in recent months. That means there is a rising demand for mental health care, and as our two guests wrote about in the recent piece for The Conversation, the field may have to rethink the way it works in order to help more people. June Gruber is an assistant professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of Colorado Boulder and director of the Positive Emotion and Psychopathology Lab there. June, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And Jonathan Rottenberg is a professor and director of clinical training in the psychology department at the University of South Florida. He's author of The Depths, The Evolutionary Origins of the Depression Epidemic. John, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, June, the piece that the two of you co-wrote starts by saying that this mental health crisis triggered by COVID-19 is escalating rapidly. Can you give us a sense of the scope of the problem we're looking at here?
I think what we're looking at is a new wave or surge of mental health difficulties and challenges that are really unlike anything we've seen before. We're seeing that, you know, from 2018 to 2020, adults in the U.S. are now 8 times more likely to meet criteria for serious mental distress. And nearly 1/3 of Americans are reporting really clinically significant and concerning symptoms of anxiety or even clinical depression. So this is a new landscape we're facing with mental health and mental health challenges. And it's not like anything in our training and experience as clinical psychologists and psychology researchers that we've faced before.
And John, this comes as people have a harder time going to in-person kind of treatment. So this is kind of a double whammy. We've got this big jump in demand here, but it's harder to get, even harder than it already was, to get access to treatment. Can you talk about that?
Sure, that's a really important point. The pandemic, in addition to being terrifying and disruptive and harmful to the economy and in really putting people's lives into chaos, it's also interfering with how people ordinarily cope. For example, the physical distancing recommendations for some people are breeding a kind of social isolation and are interfering with how they typically cope, right? We call a friend or we go, we don't want to hug a friend. And the pandemic has made that a lot more difficult. And so in addition to the, as you mentioned, the difficulty of face-to-face therapy, there's the difficulty that it's interfering with a lot of the typical ways that people cope with stress.
And a big part of your piece, June, that we're talking about is putting out the idea that, hey, in this case, the mental health community, is going to have to find creative ways to give people what they need in ways that we really haven't done as much before. What kind of solutions do you see out there?
Sure. I mean, the way we've thought about this is a change to mental health care perhaps was overdue before the pandemic, but what the pandemic has really highlighted to us and really served as a catalyst for in many ways are really radical ways we need to reimagine mental health care. So a few ideas that we have thought could be timely and should be implemented as soon as we're able to are, one, really thinking about changing the way we think about therapy as an in-person, one-to-one experience between a client and a therapist, and that we really need to think about remote-based opportunities through telehealth. We also need to think about, really reimagining who is the mental health provider. So typically it is an expert therapist or expert psychiatrist, but that in fact, there's a lot of success in peer-based interventions where people are really connecting with and relying on their community for a source of support as well. So we need to kind of think beyond in-person models and beyond simply the expert therapist and the client model. I think that's one big piece we think needs to change. I think the other thing that we think a lot about is that we need to refocus on simply treating symptoms of depression, for example, or anxiety once they're already there and taking a more proactive approach. So trying to focus on fostering wellness really early on and thinking about general interventions that we know promote well-being for everyone, whether we're in the early stages of depression or more further along. That could be exercise, sleep hygiene, spending time outdoors. We really need to sort of also expand the scope of what we think about can be useful to alleviate mental distress and suffering.
John, I'm really interested in that peer-based thing June was just talking about. I've interviewed one or two people here in Wisconsin who have done things like that in rural areas where there may not be a lot of access to mental health care, where farmers, some of them face severe mental health problems, concerns about suicide. And at least anecdotally, it sounds like a great program. What would it take to do this kind of thing at scale to have meaningful, useful peer mental health groups like that around the country?
I mean, it already exists. I'm sure you've heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is a kind of peer-delivered intervention. And I think that we can build upon the success of existing programs by giving people some training, some orientation. People who've gone through these kinds of experiences, for example, people who've struggled with depression, can help their peers cope and get through these kinds of experiences. So it's not something that would require a tremendous, this is not a moonshot. This would not require a tremendous amount of development. It's things that we already know have some degree of efficacy.
We're talking to Jonathan Rottenberg from the University of South Florida and June Gruber from the University of Colorado Boulder, both psychology professors, and we're talking about their concerns about a wave of mental health problems facing Americans in the midst of and in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, and trying to figure out how to meet the needs of people dealing with these problems. June, is part of the problem here that now maybe, as always, people are less likely to come forward and talk about a mental health problem versus, you know, hey, if you've lived through COVID-19, you might talk about it. If you live through depression during COVID-19, you might not.
I mean, that's a really great question. We know that there still is an existing stigma that can loom over mental illness in a way that we don't see as commonly with different physical ailments. But I think now more than ever, people are speaking up and speaking out and communicating with each other across all parts of the world. So I think we actually have a real opportunity for people to share their common experiences, and that many people are suffering through this pandemic. And what we think of as, you know, quote, abnormal psychology, things that we think are rare, are now more shared than ever, whether they're symptoms of severe depression, insomnia, paralyzing anxiety, and that it might be a real opportunity to come together and connect and destigmatize mental illness in a much overdue movement that's needed too.
And John, how about even knowing that there's a problem there? If we have really bad symptoms that sound like COVID-19 now, for the most part, we could get a blood test. It can be harder to self-diagnose that anxiety or depression or other mental health problem.
Yes and no. As June's saying that, I think there is increased awareness now as opposed to the past. And part of the point of our article is that there is an opportunity as people become more aware. They also are beginning to become aware of some of the tools that exist for self-diagnosing. So, of course, a qualified mental health professional is great. If you can afford it, if you can access it, strongly recommend that. But there are screening tools online that are vetted. And there are also tools online that model a lot of the features of therapy that are self-paced. And so intelligent rollout of these kinds of tools are, I think, potentially really transform how mental health problems are diagnosed and how they're treated as well.
Jude, are you seeing these kind of things rolled out with any sense of urgency, whether we're talking about expanding the kind of peer counseling you were talking about or what John was talking about with these online platforms?
I think there's a shared interest in people and the community taking mental health care into their own hands and in the kind of clinical psychology community of a revolution and how we think about and implement mental health care. I think the action still needs to happen. That's why we wrote this article. We're highlighting sentiments and perspectives that the community and mental health professionals share, but we need to now motivate that change to happen.
We're talking to June Gruber from the psychology department at the University of Colorado Boulder and Jonathan Rottenberg, also in psychology at the University of South Florida. They co-wrote a piece on The Conversation titled "Flattening the Mental Health Curve is the Next Big Coronavirus Challenge." You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you dealt with more feelings of anxiety or depression during the pandemic? Is that a new problem or maybe re-emerging? Have you been cut off from the usual things you seek for support, whether that is some kind of professional therapy or, you know, just your peer group, your friends? Have you tried remote care? How has that worked? And flipping things around, if you work in on the treatment side of things, what are you seeing? What have you been able to do to reach out to people, maybe in different ways than you were able to in the past? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with June Gruber, assistant psychology professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, and Jonathan Rottenberg, professor of psychology at the University of South Florida. We're talking about ways to flatten the mental health curve we've seen during the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot more people reporting problems with things like depression and anxiety. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have the past few months been difficult for your mental health or for someone maybe in your family or circle of friends? If you were able to get in-person treatment of some sort in the past, how have things changed? How are they working now? What do you want to see from the mental health care field? And if you are in the mental health care field, what do you think needs to happen to help address this problem? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. And John, we've alluded to this some. Even pre-pandemic, there wasn't necessarily the access to affordable mental health professional treatment. Is that a problem you'd like to see addressed, even though that's probably something that's not going to be able to spin up in the short run?
One of the big reforms that needs to be made is changing how insurance reimbursement works. Right now, for most people, if you have insurance, physical health conditions are reimbursed much more generously than our mental health care conditions. And that's something that really retards people's ability to get into therapy and to stay into therapy. But again, I think it is a surmountable challenge. It's something that can be done.
And June, can you talk about this? People might think mental health, well, that doesn't sound as urgent as, you know, a deadly disease, but there are some life or death consequences here. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, certainly. So mental health challenges can bring immense suffering and impairment to day-to-day activities, but in some serious cases, they can also lead to death due to taking one's own life. And indeed, we're seeing some recent, very alarming projections suggesting that deaths connected to or stemming from mental health issues may rival deaths directly due to the virus itself. So one study from the Wellbeing Trust suggested that COVID may lead from anywhere from, you know, close to 28,000 to over 150,000 additional deaths of despair. So this is not something to be taken lightly. It's as serious as the physical infection risk that we've been spending a lot of time addressing as a nation and world.
And John, we've had conversations on this show in the past about this concept of these deaths of despair, already a problem in the years before we heard of COVID-19. Can you talk about that problem, you know, even before 2020?
Yeah, sadly, you know, there are a lot of people in the United States that feel socially isolated, that feel that their lives aren't meaningful. And those are people who are more ripe for having problems with substances. And unfortunately, substance abuse and in overdose is one of the big categories of the deaths of despair, in addition to suicide, as June alluded to.
June, do we know about the kind of interventions for these deaths of despair that are effective, even in normal times?
Absolutely. So the good news is that we do have a lot of available data on empirically supported treatments that help with suicidal ideation, self-harm, and depressed mood that all can relate to an increased risk for suicide. So these include interventions such as cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as dialectical behavioral therapies examples. And now the real challenge is how to make sure that we're disseminating those interventions now to people who need them the most, but may be isolated at home.
We are talking about mental health during the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot more people in the United States reporting concerns about depression, anxiety, and other mental health problems. June Gruber is with us, assistant professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of Colorado Boulder. Also, Jonathan Rottenberg, professor and director of clinical training in the psychology department at the University of South Florida, talking about a piece they wrote on The Conversation on this topic and ways they say we can help address this problem. And maybe by making some quick changes, save lives along the way. John, for people listening now saying, yeah, this is me. I have depression. I have anxiety. They may not have access to that treatment. Are there things they can reach out to online, say, right now that might be able to help them?
Yeah, I mean, even in our article, we highlight a couple of resources such as the online cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectical behavioral therapy. And we also, I mean, this may sound hokey, but there are mental health programs that are available for free on the web. For example, there are podcasts. We link to some of those in web-based tools that people can use. But in addition to all those, I think that sometimes people don't use everything that's in their support network. So there's a lot of people who are struggling with depression who feel isolated and feel like they can't talk about it and don't talk about it. And so one additional step, so we're sort of an all of the above proponent, is using those support networks, start that conversation. I know it's hard. There's a lot of trepidation about talking about things like depression in yourself or with a family member. But in these times, we all need to band together. And if that's over the phone or over a Skype as opposed to in person, we all have to make the best of the situation.
June, I want to expand on something you touched on earlier as part of your plan that you proposed in the piece we're talking about, the idea of making us overall a society more devoted to mental health, expanding our mental health well-being in our daily lives. What would that look like?
I think this would look like a world in which we treat mental health as important, but as common and everyday as we treat, let's say, our different aspects of our physical health. So one analogy that we've often talked with a colleague of ours is the way we sort of think about something as simple as dental health care, right? It's something that we all go in for preventative treatment, that we all talk about in a non-stigmatized way, and that we try to provide access to. And I think we need to think of mental health as something as ordinary and common as, you know, taking care of our teeth, that we need to, you know, even if we're not actively suffering, we need to be taking steps to promoting health and wellness, and that we know where resources are, and that seeking them out is incredibly common and normalized when we are suffering, or more severely, or even moderately.
Getting back to the cause side of the problems here, John, not only have we had this disease, but we've had the economic hit we've taken over the last couple of months. Is that making things even more difficult for people?
I'm afraid so. The coronavirus contains pretty much every aspect of what we call in a different piece a toxic stressor, because it involves this great uncertainty about the future. It involves economic stress. It involves, quite obviously, a threat to physical well-being, and you worry about the health of yourself, you worry about the health of your loved ones, and there's this tremendous uncertainty about the future. And so while on the one hand we're all in this together, but on the other there's a kind of social isolation that has been going on, that's been a consequence of a pandemic. We're not able to share a meal with our friends, or go out to our favorite restaurant, and it again interferes with a lot of the ways that we typically cope with stress.
When you lay it out like that, there's a lot going on. June, is there something to be said for just acknowledging that, hey, we're up against a lot right now, and it's normal maybe that it's making us feel bad right about now?
I think so. I think one of the biggest pieces we need to acknowledge and accept is that Emotions of anger, sadness, and fear are incredibly normal and common, and one could even argue appropriate. We are facing stressors, sort of a perfect storm of stressors that John mentioned, that's unlike anything we've seen before. And to feel, you know, exuberant or happy in the midst of it, of that, that would be inappropriate and concerning, that it makes sense we're feeling stressed and anxious, and that is really us responding to a really uncertain world right now.
And John, as we wrap up, are you optimistic that we're going to be able to roll out some things that are going to help people, you know, as soon as we need them?
I really am. And so we wrote an article, big deal. But we also managed to work with a team of 30 psychologists. I've never seen like anything like this in my whole career. And we got them on the same page, and we wrote a much longer piece. And everyone kind of dropped what they were doing to talk about what we needed to do as a field. So I think there's a really strong commitment in the field of clinical psychology to try to roll out some of these tools. And I know for God's sake, there's a strong need for these. So I think the two things are gonna merge nicely. There's a strong need, and there's a strong urge to connect people with tools that will make it better. As you said, it's not going to be a cure-all, but to make it better, I think that would be a really welcome step.
We'll leave it there. John, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much.
And June, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That's June Gruber from the University of Colorado Boulder and Jonathan Rottenberg from the University of South Florida. They talked with us about a spike in mental health problems people were reporting during the COVID-19 pandemic. We've got a link to one of the resources they talked about at WPR.org/Central Time. And if you or a loved one are concerned about suicidal thoughts, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 800-273-8255.